Happy Friday! We hope your coffee is strong this morning, and we welcome you to the weekly financial news podcast with Cross Shield Financial. We hope you're ready to start your powerful financial journey, and don't worry though, it will be fun. I'm Sky, the brand manager here at Cross Shield Financial, and we also have the lovely Stephanie Volkmer, our fearless operations manager at Cross Shield Financial, and we have some amazing guests joining us today. We've got Nick Bowater and Amanda Hirschberger.
Hi.
Hey guys, two phenomenal financial coaches. So we're excited to talk about these topics with them today.
Absolutely.
Stephanie, let's talk about this first article we've got here.
Oh my gosh. This actually cracked us up when we were looking at it, and it is how TikTok's viral no spend month could come back to bite you. And so if you guys have been listeners for a while, you know that we have talked about these kind of viral saving trends or hacks and how they're really not sustainable. And this article, I was laughing when I was reading it because it's talking about how basically taking away all of your spending makes you spend more once it's done. And so Sky, I'd love for you to just kind of lead with your thoughts on this one, because you and I were laughing about this. So
yeah, that was honestly the first thing that I thought of whenever I saw this trend, was like, I know for me, I usually try to buy in bulk, like buy ahead, like toiletries, especially toilet paper, paper towels or whatever. But this type of trend for me, if I'm going to avoid spending for things, I'm just going to have to buy more the next month.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So it's really going to even out. It doesn't really work for me personally, but that's just my quick two cents.
Exactly. I mean, like, I'm doing kind of a modified book buying ban, because if you guys don't know, I have a lot of books. And during the summer, I try not to buy hardly any books, but I still do some pre-orders, some indie authors, that sort of thing, because I've learned that if I do a complete, I'm not buying any books for the entire summer, I buy a lot, as is evidenced last year when I bought 60, I think it was like 62 or 63 books at the end of August, because I hadn't bought any during the entire
summer. I thought you were going to say years.
Oh, no. We don't do that. we don't do it for a year. I would buy probably 1,000 books at the end of the year if I did that. So that's, but you know, just kind of that, like, repressing yourself from buying anything. I really don't think it's a sustainable, obviously, but Amanda, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, on the no spend month.
Yeah. I mean, there's two schools of thought there, you know, like, so for some people it may be a good idea because, you know, it's like, it becomes an addiction and it might be good to see what life is like without it. And hey, I can live without eating it, but I agree, it's not sustainable. Plus it's not teaching you anything really. Right. It's just teaching you to forego something for 30 days. And you're just counting down the seconds till that 30 days is done. And you'll just go right back to what you were doing. It's not teaching you lifelong systematic things that you can do to change your habit for your entire life. I mean, that's the way it is with anything that we do that's unhealthy for us. Yeah. If I stop eating candy for a whole month and then I just engorge on, you know, 20 bags after those 30 days, that's not healthy.
Valid.
You know, so if true. I learn to moderate myself. Yeah. If I learn to moderate myself and learn good habits, then I'll, you know, it won't be, you know, like an addiction later on. It's, you know, it's creating sustainable habits throughout your budget process and creating good, strong practices that will teach you how to spend less and to be content, not just 30 days of taking it away and then bringing it right back with a vengeance.
Exactly. Exactly. Nick, did you have any thoughts about the no spend month as well?
I mean, besides it being super problematic, like Amanda was just saying, and I agree with everything she said, I always love these new things. I mean, I think this is akin to eating Tide Pods, like that trend that went through. Like, I just look at this and I'm like, "What? How is this? TikTok is the only thing that can sell something like this." I mean, it's for all the reasons Amanda just said. I mean, I think it'd be fun just to see if I could, I mean, how bad I would fail at it, because I couldn't. I couldn't do that. You know, I'm like Amanda said, a moderation spender, and I have to have that plan, you know, I have to
absolutely
have it. I can't just absolutely go back and forth and up and down, because, you know, I'm 42 years old. Nothing in my life has ever worked this way, ever. So I've learned by experience, I guess, experiencing myself. I know that this is not a good thing for me at all. And again, everything Amanda said, the problematic nature of this is, I don't think any benefit whatsoever. It's cool, like, if you want to, like, you know, challenge your buddy to it for like a month. But mm-hmm. other than that aspect of it, yeah, I don't think this is a very good, I wouldn't recommend this to any of my clients whatsoever.
I got some insight there, because I definitely agree with both of you. And mm-hmm. it kind of feels like, to me, people who do like fasts for like to lose weight quickly.
Yeah.
You know, you're starving yourself for however long, essentially, which is not super healthy. A reset every once in a while with a doctor, I'm sure, you know, if you're working with your doctor, that's one thing, right? Some people, you know, go on liquid only for a certain amount of time or right. whatever. But if someone's like Nick's saying,
gross. Yeah, I mean, it's right. kind of liquid, honestly.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't, yeah, true. But it doesn't sound fun to me.
No, not at all.
But yeah, it's just kind of that same thing where it's like, okay, I'm not going to eat anything for this amount of days,
right?
And I'm going to starve myself, but then I'm going to probably like stuff my face and not really yeah. learn real.
Yeah.
As soon as I see a donut shop, control. It's done.
Yeah,
it's done.
Oh, donuts! Exactly, for sure, absolutely.
Well, this next article that we have is really interesting, and we kind of wanted to see what you guys thought about it. But YouTube is dominating the living room, forcing absolutely. Media companies to decide whether it's a friend or foe. We talked a little bit about like different streaming services and gimmicks mm-hmm. that they're coming up with. So we both just thought this was really interesting.
Absolutely.
YouTube's been around for a while. I know mm-hmm. that Stephanie and I are millennials, and Nick, you're like right on the cusp. And Amanda, you're also a millennial. It's like, we know mm-hmm. the YouTube world. We're used to that. It's dominating the living room. It's really interesting because YouTube made up of 9.7% of all viewership on connected and traditional TVs in the US in May, which is a yeah. huge percentage. And it's kind of funny because then it goes in to talk about Netflix, Disney, and Warner Bros. Discovery aren't sure whether YouTube is a friend or foe.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, there's a lot in this, but so yeah, Stephanie, what are your initial thoughts about this?
I've used YouTube pretty much since it came out. Like, obviously, Charlie the Magic Unicorn and, you know, all those little like rabbit holes that it first started as. And now I use it. I watch like BookTube on there. I watch atmospheric rain videos when I need to concentrate. Like, that is primarily my background noise 24/7. And so I use YouTube a lot, but I also have a tendency to not want to pay for streaming services, for many streaming services, because they tend to take a lot of the things off, and you can still find a lot of movies on YouTube for free. And it's really great. And I'm not going to go too far into that because I don't want them to get taken down, but there are free movies on YouTube. I'm just going to say that, and you can look for them.
Yeah. And Stephanie, I think that there's a, you're good. I was going to say, I think there's now like a YouTube Plus too that you can like pay
yeah.
for,
yeah.
which is interesting, and you can like watch shows and things. But Nick, go ahead. What were you going to
say? So I just had a question, because I mean, in my household, like I deleted YouTube off pretty much everything because my little boys will get in there and manipulate the control and watch that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But is there, I mean, answer this, Stephanie, because again, I'm not a huge YouTube watcher, but is there like particular content on YouTube? Do they have like their specific generated content like all the other streaming platforms do?
It's for YouTube, it's more like people, like regular people are doing the streaming and stuff. You have like your big named like gamer streamers. You have your big name BookTubers. You have a big name like political news people. Mm-hmm. But on the majority of it, it's actually just regular girl next door, guy next door, talking about, hey, this is the book I'm doing. These are the movies I've seen. This is the stuff that I'm streaming. I mean, I watch a lot of gamers on there too, because yeah, it's kind of fun to just kind of watch them build the stuff in The Sims and go, that's really cool. I would never have the patience to do that, but
that's what my kids do. They do. They like watch someone play a video game that yeah, they have. And then it's they go turn so and go fun. Play it. I was like, I get it, man. It's like, so I guess my point is that YouTube has, like, in my brain, it has a specific function. It has mm-hmm. an area, a niche where it's specifically suited to. Whereas streamers, I mean, creating their own content and, you know, posting mm-hmm. the Disney movies that we've all grown up with and whatnot. And they have specific, so it's like two different entities, but then one is becoming so massive and popular that the others are like, I mean, reading this article, I'm like, yeah, it's like, do we bail on producing our own, you know, network, our own streamers, having the servers, having the support, having all that stuff? Or do we just, you know, grab onto the big guy, the YouTube, and just, they do all the stuff and we just pay a fee? So I can see where the, when I'm reading this article, that's kind of what I'm getting from it, is like, do they want to, you know, does Disney, Warner Brothers, and Discovery, do they want to do their own thing and have YouTube in the environment? Or do they want to just bail on everything and jump to YouTube? Like last week we were talking about Apple bailing on their paid buy now pay later scheme, yeah, just because mm-hmm. it was not economical for them to maintain when all these other things are available. They just jump onto that one. So yeah, it's an interesting concept.
Well, and you have to look at especially with Disney nowadays, Disney is losing money like hand over fist. They are losing money from their parks, from their movies, from their shows, because they are not being original. And they're also allowing a lot of things to come into their parks that if I were a mom and I had a child and we wanted to go to Disney World, I can't afford to take out a mortgage to go to Disney World. It's like $4,000 yeah. for one park for like one person. Yeah. I'm like, let's go to the Disney cruise. And then you can actually see the characters. Like,
for real.
Yeah.
But
also yeah. think it's interesting adding to that, like they're not original. One of the things right. that is in the like talks between Disney people are like that they are discussing having user generated content available,
which would be smart.
It would be smart, but it's just interesting. Mm-hmm. Amanda, I want to know your thoughts as yes. well on all of this. I have concerns personally, but
I mean, these people aren't dumb. They yeah. do what makes money, and they make lots of money. Like Nick said, Apple, they're not stupid. Right. Their profits are insane. And so they didn't do the buy now, pay later because they saw the white writing on the wall. And Disney's not dumb either. I mean, they bought out so many different studios and they bought out so many different franchises. They're not stupid. They know yeah. what they're doing and yeah. they know how big YouTube is. I mean, I've looked at the numbers on how many people, how often, how long people watch YouTube, and the numbers are steady. I mean, it is insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they're like, hey, let's dip our toe in the water. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're starting off with small things like this little character with Ariel and the little Winnie the Pooh thing. And let's see how it works out. And yeah. it's smart. It's so smart. And like they're trying this out and seeing how it works. And I don't blame them. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is kind of funny though, is it's just going to turn back into, I just see this morph back into a cable television yes. network where we're paying for cable TV again, or satellite. It's just yeah. called YouTube mm-hmm. instead of cable TV. And it's going to be one massive conglomerate instead of
yep.
multiple options. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out, because yeah, I have subscriptions to certain things. We pay for a couple of them, but mm-hmm. like I've never bought TV in my entire life, like cable or yeah. you mm-hmm. know, like satellite or anything like that.
You're
like,
rich enough for that.
That's been a while. Yeah.
Well, no, I just thought it was dumb, and I got better things to do with my time, and so then watch commercials my whole life, because I just think you know, commercials just make me want to blow my brains out.
Same.
Like,
yep. mm-hmm.
And so I'll do anything to avoid them. And so I just think it's, you know, it's, but I'm still fascinated by mm-hmm. the data on how much YouTube draws people in. So I'm just kind of sitting in the background seeing what's going to happen, you know, it's just awkward. Kind of a quiet observer.
Yeah.
I just, when I'm reading this fact here of Google, YouTube was founded in 2005, sold to Google for $1.65 billion. And then 20 mm-hmm. years later, it's worth over $400 billion. As a standalone yeah. company, not even connected to the Google side of the house, too, just by itself. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Yeah,
I had no idea how massive like it got. I mean, in 20 years, I mean, like $400 billion is insane.
I mean, and it's honestly a good thing, and also it's like kind of a mixed bag. Like, it's good for the people who I need a job that I need to be able to pay paid, and they can be monetized by their content. But then you also have people who literally that is what they're trying to do, and you can tell, like, mm-hmm. I need to get $150 every single viewing, and I'm like, oh, you're just desperate. I don't like that. No, we're not watching you. Like, go away. But then you have the people who are like actually genuinely like, hey, this is what I do, and this is for fun, and oh my gosh, I actually got money on it. What? And that's really a nice thing. But I can see kind of the problem area is if Disney starts acquiring this stuff, is that we might be losing a lot more independent thinkers and a lot more smaller video platforms, because Disney might come in and be like, well, you're not really doing well, goodbye. And I mean, I'm sorry, some of my favorite people they only have like 150 to 200 people that subscribe. And I'm like, I love this. Please don't go away. Please keep creating content.
Yeah, I think you got a point there, Stephanie, as far as, you know, if Disney starts owning everything or YouTube starts owning anything, and then whoever's the executives and on that board dictate what, like, if that's the only place that we as Americans or the world has to go, they can dictate everything.
Yep.
And that's kind of scary too, especially with, you know, a lot of the things, you know, being from Florida, the Disney versus DeSantis thing is massive. It's all over the news all the time. And, you know, just there's content on there that, you know, some people don't appreciate, especially in children's shows, you know, mm-hmm. And so there's that constant cultural war going on too. And that just kind of fuels the fire of a lot of things. And like, I don't turn on my TV to see that stuff. I turn on to be entertained, to see a story. You know, I think they're killing the Star Wars thing now. Right? I'm upset emotionally.
We can't talk about that. We cannot talk about that. I'll get sued or something like that. I just mean we'll all be very sad, so we don't want to talk about that.
Absolutely.
I want to be entertained. I want to have fun. I want originality. I want, you know, that's the whole, like it says here, Disney has been a forever storyteller, like, since its existence. And let's get back to that, and, you know, whatever platform it is on, you know, I'll probably follow that one. Whatever, yeah, personal choice. I want it first.
But yeah, and so, you know, that's it's always an interesting thing to just kind of look at, and not just accept everything that is being written, but also to look at all of the both positive and negative sides, which is what we kind of try to do here, is show you guys both sides of the articles that we find. So this next one was very interesting. Sky and I were talking about this earlier, and electric vehicle prices are tumbling. And here's how they now compare with gas-powered cars. And Amanda, I know you have some experience with the vehicles, and I'd love to get your knowledge on this one, because I found this really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like the concept's great, you know, clean energy, all those things. I'm all for those things, but people don't realize the amount of things it takes to make those gas power, the electric powered vehicles, and the cost of replacing the batteries. Amen. It's insane. And the amount of toxins that it puts in our environment with all of these batteries that are now going to be dumped into our landfills, and it's just going to leak into our, you know, our environments, you know, like I could say that about a lot of clean energy things, you know, and the harm it's causing. We need to think long-term here, you know, not just what our vehicles pumping out of the backside. Do I think gas powered? Yeah, it's harming the environment. Absolutely. I'm not stupid. But I also helped build an electric car when I was younger, and I've seen the, you know, the cost behind it and the cost to maintain it. And, it's expensive. It's super expensive. And, it's super expensive to maintain. And those batteries, I mean, they're acid. There is acid in those batteries, and there's a lot of them, and to replace them.
Lithium is not great for the environment.
Yeah. It's just not. I mean, I'm all for keeping to try to find new ways to, you know, help make our environment cleaner. And I'm all for moving forward, and there's going to be stumble blocks along the way, but also know what you're getting into. Know that, you know, just because you're not paying for gas now, you know, number one, your electricity bill will go up. And because you're charging your vehicle, so understand that there will be an additional cost there, but also understand that when it comes time to replace all your batteries, it's going to be hefty. It's going to be a really, really hefty price, because it's not, you can't just go down to, you know, O'Reilly's or CarQuest or wherever you go and go pick up all these batteries. It doesn't work that way. And so, and realize that, like, and me growing up on cars, I grew up fixing cars. And I remember when I was younger, we used to fix things. We used to fix starters. We used to fix, now they just get replaced. But, you know, we actually used to fix things. And those were the components that actually broke down. Now, it's more of an electrical component. I think I've replaced the last three issues with my car were all electrical components that I just replaced. And that was the issue. And it's just going to become more and more of that, where, you know, it's going to be more specialty bound to where we have to take it to shops to get it fixed versus us being able to fix it ourselves, even if we have some knowledge in that area. So, I mean, it's just, you know, just understand what you're doing and what you're purchasing. Research, do the work behind it. And this is with everything that you do. Anything that you buy, you know, people are like, oh, this is great. It's amazing. You should totally do this. Right. Do the research. Think about what you're doing. Yeah. Yes, you should. And ask the people that actually work on them. Don't go look up. You don't go Google crazy. Go ask the people that actually work on these things and actually do them. Get the information from the source. And so just be an informed buyer.
Yeah. Well, and also on the electric vehicles, just what you mentioned, Amanda, you have to go to a specialized shop to get this worked on. If you have an electric vehicle, you can't just go down to your mom and pop shop that you've been going to have them work on it. You have to go to either the dealership that sold you that car or to a specialized electric motor company. You can't just go to wherever you want. And a lot of people don't realize that. They're just like, oh, it's just a car. I can go wherever my mechanic has been. And I'm like, but you actually can't. Like, I used to work for a car company, and we would have people bring their very expensive, very dead electric vehicles into the shop. And we would have to tell them, we're sorry that you towed it here, but you can't, we can't fix this. We legally cannot touch this car. We don't have the expertise. And they would get mad, and we're like, sorry, we didn't sell you this car.
Right? You probably said it 100 times before they rolled the show. Yeah.
Each manufacturer has this, in each shop, each dealership shop that I worked at, we had this massive computer that was hooked up and updated regularly. Yeah. And that is what reset the systems. That's what reset the master, computer and everything. And it was updated consistently, because sometimes there's an electrical component that wouldn't work, but just an update would fix it. It's kind of like, it's basically like this massive rolling computer. And so, and they have the key to fix it. And so, I mean, it was kind of cool fixing them that way. You know, it's fun for me as a mechanic, because it was like working on a computer more than it was working on a car. And it got me all excited, because I love working on computers. But at the same time, they're the ones that have it, and they're the ones that can fix it. So it's not just something you can do and just, you know, pull up the hood and start fixing it. So if you like working on your own vehicles, it's just not something I would recommend. You know, because it's going to be really tough for you to do that. And so, like I say, just be informed depending on, you know, where you are in life and what you want to do with your vehicle, and understand what you're getting into. And so, but in the end, it's still your choice.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
Can I add something right before we go?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, you're fine.
I love speed. I love cool gadgets. And being a prior electronics technician, I know what it's like to work on computers and have the software interface with the hardware and all that kind of stuff. And it's a reason why I swing axes and kick stumps now for a living, because it got to the point where I'm like, this is not fun. But like, as far as like a performance wise, like I've rented Teslas, I've driven Rivians, and those things, they're so much fun. And just the technology involved in it is awesome. They're massively expensive. And then reading through this article, it's like the resale value are just plummeting right now. They're absolutely plummeting. Like, a couple of years old and you're paying half the price. Like, some of these vehicles are $150,000, $115,000. And now you're buying them for $23,000.
Yeah.
Like 3 to 2 years later, that's insane. So it's a financial investment. Just looking at that, it's like, dude, this is worse than a lease. This is terrible.
Yeah.
And then you look at the, you know, like Amanda said, the amount of fossil fuels that is made, that is spent on production of one vehicle. There's an article I read from NBC that was saying that there's, in its entire life, if that car would last 20 years, it would come nowhere near close to the saving, you know, it's carbon emission. It wouldn't come anywhere near close paying for itself as far as carbon emissions go. And then there was another article that a lady went up to the supercharger station, plugged her vehicle in, and it was $72 to charge it. And she's like, that's like $20 more than it charges it takes to put gas in my fuel. Petrol car. Sorry. And it's just like, what is going on here? And my very last point, I think this is hilarious, and I make fun of California anytime I get the chance to. I used to live there, so I'm just like, this is insane. their whole thing about trying to be, you know, get rid of all like diesel and all gas vehicles by, I think it was like 2050, but be like totally clean by 2030, or not have them available in California by 2030. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, telling everyone electric vehicles. And then they have like, I think like nationally famous for rolling brownouts in the winter, in the summertime. So, and then literally after, I think it was a couple months after this whole, like, this is what we're doing. Everyone's like, you know, don't charge your electric cars because it's killing the grid. And so we have these power grids, and Amanda touched on this. Like, there's a way to do it. Yes, I want to transfer to green energy. Don't get me wrong to this kind of stuff. Course. But there's got to be an economic way to do it that doesn't destroy our economy, put people homeless, and then actually our grid can support something like this. There's other articles about trucking companies trying to go with electric trucks, and they'd have to have like three cities worth of electricity just in one depot to charge like 15 trucks. So right now it's like, it's somewhat unachievable, like work to it, but
yes,
it's gotta be a balance, you know?
Well, and especially if you live in the Midwest, the majority of us right here on the show today, we live in the Midwest, and the Midwest one is famous for lots of long highways, and two, not many stops along those highways. If you go from Oklahoma up to Ohio, which I've driven that so many times in my sleep, literally from Indiana to Illinois, there is a stretch of 150 road. There is nothing. There's not a gas station. There's not a pit stop. There's not a rest stop. You just go and you pray that you have enough gas to go up there.
Or you buy a Honda generator and put it in your trunk.
Exactly. It's just like, you do not do that. But the thing is like, you know, electric vehicles, they're getting very popular on the West and the East Coast because those cities are kind of formed around walkability and electric and green energy. Whereas the Midwest, we're like, I think it was last year we finally got some charging stations in the Target up on Memorial. And I'm like, oh, look, we actually have charging stations. That's interesting. That was the first time I've seen them, and we've sold electric cars for almost 10 years here. So I'm like, that's interesting. So, you know, do your research, make sure that when you're getting the car, it's not just because you want to get the newest, best thing or I want to do clean energy. Does your town support it though? Do you have a way to charge it, or is it going to skyrocket your energy bill? Like, or wait a couple of years until apparently they're going to be really cheap.
Right. That's what I was going to say. It is exciting to see the prices drop.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, disregarding all of the issues about how clean it actually is. that's my biggest concern. But in Tulsa, like, if you live in Tulsa area, you will only survive. I mean, unless you pay thousands of dollars to get the specific like plug and power that you need to charge your car at home and then hope that, you know,
it lasts.
it lasts and that there's so many concerns there, but like Brookside area, I know there's a ton right there. There's only a few areas. Yeah. And that's what I was going to bring up is like, is it even an option for you actually?
I was driving from Florida to Washington State because I PCS'd up to Washington State, and it was January, and we were stopped in, I can't remember what state it was, but I was talking to these people and they had a brand new fully electric BMW that was charging, and mind you, it's like -6 degrees and there's 3 feet of snow on the ground and it's like miserable, and then they're in the coffee shop with us, and I'm like, yeah, how's it going? Like, oh, we love the car, blah 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 blah. It's like, yeah, we were, I'm like, well, what does the winter do to it? Like, what is the cold? Because I mean, cold soaking a battery is a thing. right? Even with lithium sometimes. And then they're like, oh yeah, it cuts it in about half. And I was like, oh yeah, how did that affect your trip? Because they were driving from like New York to California. And I was like, how does that affect your trip? Like, oh, we had to come three states over because there's no charging in Wyoming. And I was that's kind of like terrifying because like one, your battery only lasts like 100 miles, which is you Wyoming and Texas, you can go easily 100 miles and not see anything. And then I'm just like, it was a really nice BMW EV. I don't know what type it is or whatever the specs of it, but they're saying that it cuts in half, and usually they're about 280, 300 miles maybe on a full charge if you drive it, not like Nick Bowater does. But and then like in the wintertime, it's like -6 degrees. Like that's in Alaska, that you can like pull over on the side of the car, not see anybody, and then die that night of exposure. Like that's a thing.
Yeah.
So if your battery's dead, then that your heater doesn't work, nothing works in there. So to me, I'm just like as a person who loves road trips and loves driving. Except for the rental cars, and I was buzzing around Atlanta in one, and I loved it, and I charged it more than I'd ever spent in a gas station. But yeah, it was definitely a food for thought when you're making that choice.
Exactly. And you know, it comes down to what is more important to you. Is it more important to you to have, you know, the coolest car and the newest thing out there and spend more money charging it, spend more time trying to find places to charge it? Or is it more beneficial for you to just keep your old, you know, gas powered car and keep driving that until, you know, the entire country has all charging stations? So, I mean, let's just be real. That's my point. I'm like, no, you know what? My car already has a push button start. I don't really want to go any further on that because at least I can still start my car if I need to. So. Yeah,
I'm excited to see if hydrogen power takes over. Like electric is just like, no, it's not feasible. And then goes to hydrogen power because a lot of companies now are developing hydrogen have been developing hydrogen powered vehicles. So I'm really excited to see where that goes because that is honestly, I mean, hydrogen's in the air and its byproduct is water. So,
I've seen several videos and they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
So cool.
They're really cool.
So
cool.
Yeah.
And wasn't it Calvin Coolidge or FDR? It was one of the older presidents, and they actually made a water powered car. Like, and the only reason I remember that is because my history professor would always talk about, he would scare the people who would visit the White House because he'd put them in the car and then drive towards the lake and be like, it's fine. And then it would like just go. So, I mean, hydrogen would be actually a beneficial, I think, energy source. I think that would be a cleaner source than what we've got with the lithium.
The documentaries on it are pretty phenomenal. They really are.
I bet we can find them on YouTube, right?
Yeah, that's true.
We could. Get on
YouTube. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today. We are Cross Shield Financial. And so if you would like to have a free 15-minute consultation, please feel free to click the link below to meet with either Amanda or Nick to get started on your financial journey. If you like today's podcast, be sure to hit that like button, subscribe, and follow. And also check out our bio for links to all of our socials to stay tuned on what's next with weekly financial news, as well as our newest podcast, Too Many S's. We upload every Friday at 12 p.m. for Too Many S's. And 3 p.m. for weekly financial news. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and Deezer platforms. Thank you all so much for joining us today. We hope you have an amazing day. You get some coffee or tea, and happy savings. Bye.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it.